WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latte from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Lehrer, and this is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJP FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. It's New York and New Jersey Public Radio. More than a third of adults in the United States are obese. Obesity is correlated with higher risks of diabetes, heart disease, asthma, and cancer. And this change in America's bodies is also changing our sex lives and relationships. Sarah Varney explores all this in an unflinching look at weight and our personal lives, from childhood and adolescence through dating and marriage. In her new book, it's called XL Love, How America's Obesity Crisis is Complicating America's Love Life. Welcome to WNYC, Sarah Varney.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
So you write in your book, if you go to a bookstore or library and look up at the indexes of books about intimacy, dating, marriage, and personal relationships, you are not likely to find the words obesity or weight. Your background is in health reporting, some for NPR, for Kaiser Health News as well. Tell us about why you felt this book needed to be written.
Well, as a health reporter, I'm sure like many health reporters across the country, you know, we've spent a lot of time over the last decade reporting on obesity. We've looked at everything from how obesity affects pubertal development in children. We've looked at, obviously, the growing rates of diabetes and heart disease and all these other sorts of things. And it struck me that really we weren't treating overweight and heavy people, obese people, with the same kind of, we weren't really asking the critical questions, which was, yes, this is perhaps affecting your health, but how is this affecting your relationships? How is this affecting your experience as a human being as you go throughout your life? So I was very interested in trying to understand how these things are affecting tweens and teens as they come into their sexual selves, as 20 and 30-somethings were heading out into the dating market, and in marriages. I mean, marriage is already a difficult thing as it is, and now you add weight to it. You add your personal struggle around weight, and it becomes very difficult to stay connected to your spouse when you're really at war with yourself.
It's a very difficult thing to talk about. So listeners, we want to know if weight gain or obesity has complicated your love life. Have you talked about it in your relationships, or do you leave it mostly unsaid? Give us a call, 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. Have the health effects of obesity made intimacy challenging for you, or socially? Have you felt less willing to put yourself out there in the dating market? Give us a call at 212-433-9692. Again, 212-433-WNYC. So, Sarah Varney, to start your book, you start in childhood, and in fact, in a neonatal intensive care unit in Mississippi, where you describe very small, teeny, premature babies being next to overgrown, larger babies, both of which are a reflection of the obesity problem in Mississippi with mothers with chronic hypertension and diabetes. So this affects our physiology. This also affects the way we relate to one another. In childhood, for children, you also say that it accelerates puberty and makes our reproductive lives start earlier. How does that work?
Well, for a long time, our pediatricians have believed that once girls had a certain percentage of body fat, about 17% or so was the longstanding idea, that it somehow triggered the pubertal process. And we still are trying to understand what triggers the pubertal process. There's many factors involved, but we know for sure that weight or fat is a big part of that. So what you're seeing in places like Mississippi, but really all over the country, Mississippi is just ahead of the curve, if you will. We're seeing kids who are 5, 6 years old. I mean, one of the doctors I talk about in the book, he's up in the Delta in Mississippi. He has young girls who are developing pubic hair at 5 and 6 years old. So pediatric endocrinologists are giving them hormone shots to try and ward off obesity. And these are not just one-off, bizarre cases. This is happening with significant regularity in places like Mississippi and elsewhere. And so you have these pediatric endocrinologists who have really kind of been on the front lines of trying to deal with these kids, both boys and girls, but girls, it's a little bit more public when they go through puberty. And so you have these kids who are 7, 8, 9 years old, whose breasts are budding, who are getting very grown-up shapes at really early ages. And when I talked to the chief of pediatric endocrinology at the University of Mississippi Medical Center, her big concern is that particularly these girls are attracting attention from older boys, older men, and they have physically developed, but they have not psychologically and emotionally developed to the same extent.
So you've talked to a number of doctors in the book, and you also talked to girls and boys going through this in childhood and in early adolescence. One of the things that I thought was pretty striking is you describe two phenomena. One, there's a separation for overweight and obese kids where they kind of lag behind where their peers are in terms of dating and those first experiences with romance. And then you also describe that there's also characterized by more sexually adventurous, sexually risky behavior in some overweight, and I believe it was girls that you were talking about in that phenomenon. So two seemingly contradictory things happening.
Right. So part of the reason I got very interested in what was going on with teenagers is this question of, and particularly in a place like Mississippi, is, we've long known that, of course, being overweight is not exactly a characteristic that is chosen for, right? That is people that opt for in the dating market, for instance, whether that's adults or in teens. So I was curious, if you were in a place like Mississippi where, the majority of kids are overweight or obese, did that change kind of the dating dynamics in a sense? And did that change the sort of romantic markets there? And what you find is that everything sort of gets scaled up. So the kids who were, maybe made fun of in a sense before, who were overweight, now it's the morbidly obese kids who are ostracized or sort of put on the outside of the social circles. But what you find in terms of the dynamics of sort of who gets involved romantically and then sexually is that overweight and particularly obese girls still are far less likely to have a boyfriend, are far less likely to have a sexual experience as if they're, quote, normal age or normal weight girl. But when they do engage in sexual behavior, it's much riskier. So although it sounds contradictory, the idea is they are less likely to engage in sex to begin with, but when they do engage in sex, they're more likely to have multiple sexual partners, not use condoms, engage in other kinds of risky sexual behavior.
When you first started answering that question and were sort of searching for words, I had that experience a lot when I was reading your book because it made me feel uncomfortable. Because on the one hand, you're describing what happens when people go out onto the dating market and that skinny is the ideal and it's more difficult for people who are overweight and obese and that creates isolation and loneliness and it's challenging. And also in documenting it in your book, you're showing this is happening at a larger scale and it's something we need to deal with. So it gets to questions of shame and fat shaming. How did you address that as you were writing the book about how to talk about relationships and love in a way that wasn't just going to perpetuate this idea that it's really hard when you're overweight to find love? Can be.
Sure, absolutely. And I mean, I certainly went at this book as a journalist, so I am not saying this is a good thing, this is the right thing. I mean, obviously, I and every parent in the world wants their child to feel loved and feel appreciated, regardless of their body size. I thought it was important, though, not to just simply say, well, we should all just sort of get along and we should all just not, you know, to simply to say that it's really all about our perceptions, and that if we could just simply do away with discrimination against obese people, that somehow their lives would be eased automatically. And I think that the difficulties are much more profound than that, that you have boys and girls, and then you've certainly talked to adults who, when they're overweight, it's very difficult to keep up with them at school, on the playground. There's other ways in which being overweight is not just about the way the world treats you, but it's also about the way you walk, the body that you're sort of having to carry around every day. Now, obviously, for kids who are just slightly overweight, that may be less so, but for kids who are obese, that certainly has an impact. So I really tried to take it from a very neutral perspective, but I'm not interested in engaging in, you know, fat shaming or the defense of fat or whatever, but just to simply say, as a reporter, I was very interested in documenting what's happening so that when we need to look back on this period in American life, we can say this was the experience, at least one slice of it, this was the experience of, you know, a number of people throughout the country at this time.
I want to bring Ron in Stamford into the conversation. Ron, you say this is something that you talk about in your marriage. Hi, welcome to WNYC.
Good to be with you.
Yeah, so you talk about weight gain with your spouse?
Yes, and we're pretty open about it. I mean, when she starts getting, I don't want to say fat, when she starts gaining weight, I say, honey, you got to do something about it. And she goes to Zumba more often, or she diets, or both. And she says the same thing to me recently. I started getting a belly, and right now we're both dieting and pretty successfully. But I will mention that I've run into real resentment in past relationships when I mentioned my partner's weight gain. So I guess it depends on the person.
Yeah, Ron, I mean, tell me about that conversation, because it's a delicate one, you know, to say to your partner. I mean, it's something that can feel so difficult if it sounds like your partner is saying, I'm not attracted to you, or you need to lose weight for me to be attracted to you. How did that conversation happen?
I'm a pretty shallow guy, and I'm pretty direct, so I just say it. Like, honey, I'm sorry, but your butt's getting big.
Huh.
And, you know, my wife right now, she understands that. She understands that I want to be married to someone who's attractive, and she wants to be married to someone who's attractive. So it goes both ways.
So that works in your relationship. Well, thanks for your call.
Like I say, it did not always work in the past. I ran into some real resentment.
Yeah.
A couple of girlfriends.
Yeah, it can be a difficult conversation to have. Thanks for your call, Ron. But Sarah Varney, I want to ask you about that. I mean, even broaching the conversation about weight in your relationship, you talk a lot about married couples and the phenomenon of married couples. Once they marry, it's very common for both partners to gain some weight. What did you hear from people when you talked about how they discussed that?
Well, certainly when I talked to a lot of therapists, marriage and family therapists around the country, and they would say that it's far easier for couples to talk about finances, to talk about sex, to talk about pretty much anything else except for weight, particularly when the weight is somehow involved in their sexual life or sort of the cooling of their sexual life. So it's indeed very difficult to talk about. I think in part because when you say to somebody, honey, I think you're gaining a little bit of weight, it gets interpreted as, therefore, I'm a bad person, right? So I think the problem is that we've sort of made weight somehow related to worthiness, or which in my mind, of course, it has nothing to do with. It's just simply a fact. You know, you either gain weight or you lose weight or you're about the same weight. But I think for a lot of people, it is, of course, so intensely personal. We meet in the book this one woman, Dana Engelhart, it's her real name. She lives in Belmont, California. She struggled with weight as a youngster, but when you actually go back and look at the photos of her, she is just sort of a fleshy teen. I mean, grew up in the 70s and was certainly not overweight, but her parents who were very concerned that, you know, she not gain too much weight. So very early on, she became very aware of her weight. She got married right after high school and had a child and was putting on quite a bit of weight, and her husband was kind of mean about it. So she has spent really the last 30, 40 years trying to kind of undo all of this hurt that really was seeded during her teenage years. So I think then you put yourself in a marriage and you're dealing with a pain that's almost, older than the marriage is. It's much more difficult to have that conversation be just about, just about weight, as opposed to everything that happened to me, my childhood, how I feel about myself, my self-worthiness, all of those kinds of things.
I really appreciated Dana Engelhardt's honesty with you. I mean, she describes, we first meet her, and she's talking about her nighttime routine and how quickly she tries to change into her nightgown, and when she's sleeping beside her husband, Larry, feeling, like she doesn't want to be touched because she feels ashamed. And then we follow her through this process of choosing to get bariatric surgery. And the results are dramatic. She loses over 100 pounds, and then it doesn't automatically make all of those relationship issues resolve. What happened after she lost all that weight?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And it's something that when you talk to the leading weight loss specialists who work with, because most folks who go through bariatric surgery have to have sort of psychological counseling before they go through. And the ones that are most successful oftentimes join these bariatric surgery support groups. There's a man here in San Francisco, Dr. Rabkin, who runs, I think, one of the best groups in the country. 40, 50 people show up every month for years and years and years after their surgery just to be able to stay in the conversation, in part because weight loss can be really difficult, and particularly in a marriage. Like in Dana's instance, in Dana's example, she and her husband had their relationships had really cooled for many, many years. So just because she lost weight, she was sort of expecting that he was going to look at her one day and say, "All right, honey, let's, I'm in love. I'm madly in love with you. I want you again." Of course, for Larry, he had always wanted her. He said, "I didn't mind her weight," but she just couldn't believe it because she was so at war with herself. But after the weight loss, she was sort of expecting that he would kind of pop too. And when he didn't, and she called him on it, she said, "I don't understand why you're not, looking at me." He said, "It's just been so long that I've looked at you in that way that I had to really," and Larry said to me, "I really had to learn her signals all over again." So it's been a difficult road. I mean, this idea that somehow weight loss is the answer to relationships that have suffered in part because of weight is not an easy one.
I want to bring in Donna from Vero Beach, Florida. Hi, Donna. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning.
Hi.
Thank you.
Sure. So this is something that you've dealt with in your life?
My whole life. I was a fat kid. I was a fat teenager. I was a fat young woman, and always constantly embarrassed. I was raised by a mother who very early on, put me on diets, took me to doctors, had my thyroid checked, and I too had a gastric bypass, and it wasn't until I had my bariatric surgery and went to that counseling, although I had been to counseling before, did I really get to the crux of the emotional eating and the pushing down of the pain and the suffering that I had all my life.
Do you think it affected your love life over
Absolutely.
Your life?
Absolutely.
In what
Absolutely.
Ways?
Absolutely. First of all, I always chose the wrong men. Or they
that
chose
happens
me.
To everybody, no matter what your weight sometimes.
or they chose me. I'm not quite sure. And how they handled it. Well, how I had two husbands. So how one of them handled it was he would sleep with other women. Mm-hmm. I bore his child, but the women he took out and the women he took out socially were young, slim, attractive women. And I was home, taking care of the baby, which is fine with me, but it was a horrible life. I can't even begin to tell you the pain and suffering I had, family-wise, friends-wise, men-wise, sex-wise, just always ashamed, always never feeling good enough, always never feeling right enough, and that's so not right.
Thank you for your call, Donna. Sarah Varney, is that a story that you heard a lot while you were talking to people about their intimate lives and obesity?
Oh, I can tell you. Yes, absolutely. I really appreciate the caller sharing that. I went to this bariatric surgery support group meeting for for many years, actually. It's held every month in San Francisco. And I also went to several other weight loss support groups and talked to those who work with people who are losing weight, either surgically or non-surgically. And this is one of the things that they will say is that a good marriage will survive a significant weight loss, but a mediocre or a bad marriage won't. And the weight loss therapists, they're very honest and direct about what's going on here. I mean, they will say, and you see it when you're there, they will say that there are some men, for instance, in this case, who will want their partner to be bigger. There's a certain level of security in having a woman who is bigger, who in their mind, perhaps they think she doesn't have another option but me. And then when she starts to lose the weight, it's very threatening because now all of a sudden, perhaps she feels empowered. She thinks, why did I make this decision to be with this guy? Why have I put up with this kind of relationship for so long? And there were a number of people that I met over the course of reporting this book that had that experience. I mean, there were a number of people, of course, whose marriages like Dana's got difficult, but they made it through. But there were a lot of women particularly who said, you know, I have been putting up with a lot for many years, and I now have this renewed sense of self-confidence, whether it's from the weight loss or whether it's just from really intensive therapy around what the caller had said, you know, that sense of self-hate and trying to understand where that comes from and trying to tackle it, that a lot of these women feel empowered and they think, okay, I want something better for my life.
One of the things you talk about in the book is the experience of overweight and obese women, the experience of overweight and obese men, and how that differs by race and culture. I want to bring Erica in Manhattan into the conversation. Erica, what do you want to add on that?
Well, I wanted to ask the author if she, like you said, and you just said, if she spoke to different cultures. And I think that it's not just about race. I think that it is cultural, but I found that there are people of all races. There are men who prefer a certain body type. I think sometimes when we talk about obese, I think we kind of get caught up in numbers, but there are a lot of plus size men and women who are very active, who go to the gym, who, you know, work out, and they just are bigger, but their level of activity is great, but they're, you know, a bigger frame. And I think that culturally there are some cultures who prefer a woman and even a man who are a bit, I guess you could say, sturdier or a bit curvier. And I think, have you spoken to anyone about that, about how that changes? I mean, there's a lot of women out here who are bigger girls who have great dating lives, and they are out on the weekends, and they have no trouble getting men.
Thanks for your call, Erica. Sarah Varney, what about that? How did you find the experiences of people breaking out when you looked at the impact of race and culture?
Sure. Well, I definitely was very clear in the book that I spent a lot of time talking with people who are Latino or African-American, who are white. Asians are a little more difficult because they're such a small percentage of the overall U.S. population that when you try and look at some of these longstanding national surveys that are run by the NIH, for instance, they're a very small percentage of the overall population, so it's much more difficult to sort of understand the Asian American experience. But certainly, in the book, I talk a lot about African Americans, Latinos, and whites, particularly as they're reflected in these national surveys. So the first thing I would say is that I absolutely went out and talked with many, many Black and Latino men and women, and was very aware of the differences early on. I mean, we know, for instance, that African-American women are much overweight. African-American women are much more likely to consider themselves a, quote, normal weight or healthy weight. And white women who are normal weight are much more likely to consider themselves overweight. So we know that for sure there's a race and ethnicity is an important lens to look at this issue through. That said, it was really fascinating to me talking to particularly a lot of young African-American women who would say, It is absolutely not the case that any size and shaped, bigger African-American female body is accepted. I mean, there was this one woman that I met who's in her early 20s, and she talks about this term that I then heard around the country called the booty do, and meaning that, you know, you can have a big shape, but it has to make sure you have to look like sort of the Beyonce shape, right? Where your butt, what is it she said? I'm sorry, your gut don't stick out more than your booty do. And so it's this idea that, I mean, young Black women are still very aware that it's not just any shape that is still considered sexy and attractive in their communities. And this is what, you know, people are reporting to me. So, and you see it. I mean, you see it when you go into high schools or you talk to young people, and you can see the young girls who have a very, who are really bulbous, you know, a very big shape. That life is a much more difficult life than somebody who is simply really shapely. And I would absolutely agree, and I'm sure any doctor would, that somebody who is bigger, who's getting a lot of activity, that's wonderful. That's exactly what you want to do. Unfortunately, what I'm looking at are kind of population-wide statistics. So while you may have exceptions here and there, population-wise, we know that the more weight you gain, the more likely you are to develop diabetes and heart disease and these other kinds of conditions. So it's absolutely the case that there are exceptions to that. And I'm sure it sounds like the caller knows many of those people. But when you're looking at a population study, you really are looking much more broadly than that.
Abby and Chelsea, welcome to WNYC. What do you want to add to this conversation?
Hi. I admit I got like really big because I quit smoking 2 packs a day, and every year I put on 10 pounds. And over 15 years, it's not that hard to put on 10 pounds in a year. And over 15 years, that was 150 pounds. So that's big. And a lot of it was centered in my stomach. Now, I don't have to tell you, when it comes to, let's be frank here, intercourse, a stomach that's really big can really get in your way. And I'm a comedian, and I'm also a songwriter, and I wrote a song called Too Fat, and I can't say the word. You know, too fat to...
I understand. I got it. Yeah.
And it's very funny. And, you know, I have incorporated this stuff into my comedy because I did actually go 10 years celibate, partly due to depression. But now I started seeing a guy who was really into my size. And he was so positive about it. And like the other person your guest was talking about who was skeptical of her husband being into her, I really had trouble believing him because I'm bisexual. And I looked in the mirror and I said, I would not do her, you know. But he was into me. And he was so positive that it totally turned my head around. And now I'm feeling very attractive, even though I've only lost maybe 30 of the 150 extra pounds that I put on. And I'm still going on the loss thing, but I'm feeling much more attractive because somebody kind of reconnected me with my libido. And I had a sense of humor about it. It wasn't like, oh, I'm a reject. It's just like, well, I definitely have some mechanical impediments making this a challenge. And not just with other people, but, you know.
I got what you're saying, Abby. Thanks for your call. So, Sarah Varney, what Abby was talking about there in terms of slow weight gain and it happened over a number of years, that's one individual's story. Your book makes the argument that this is related to the expanding obesity crisis in America, that one in every three adults in the U.S. is obese. Is there any indications that difficulties in relationship, difficulties are sort of scaling up as the obesity epidemic expanded over the 2000s and into now the 2010s?
Sure. And I would add to that, certainly one in three are obese, but two out of three are overweight and obese. So it's much more the norm to be overweight than it is to not be overweight. And the therapists, we spent quite a bit of time interviewing marriage and family therapists, as I mentioned, across the country. And what we heard from them was that complaints about weight and sexual intimacy are very much on the rise in their practices, and that this is an incredible challenge for them because they are obviously tasked with trying to on one hand, they want to be able to say, you know, you should love your spouse no matter their weight. You should love your spouse regardless. But at the same time, this is a real issue. You have spouses who, like in the case of Dana and Larry, have really kind of drifted apart from one another and desperately want to get back to each other. I mean, this is not the case that, you know, these women and men are all doomed. It's just simply that this is really difficult work. So I certainly did hear from marriage and family therapists that this is an increasingly a bigger part of their practice. But when you also talk to urologists and gynecologists, they'll say the same thing. I mean, interestingly enough, urologists have kind of been secretly on the front lines of this for many, many years, in part because men's bodies are much more impacted by weight than women's are, I mean, in terms of the physiological response. So we know, for instance, that the adipose tissue, so men, for instance, who have those really big bellies, in that type of fat, which is a different type of fat than what you store on your thighs, for instance, there's an enzyme in that type of fat that actually converts testosterone into estrogen. So you oftentimes will see with bigger men, not oftentimes, I mean, the process is the more weight you gain as a man, particularly in the belly, the more your testosterone production decreases. So bigger men oftentimes have lower levels of testosterone. When men test for low testosterone, one of the things that doctors will often say is, well, almost always say actually, is you need to lose weight. And there's been many studies that show that when men lose weight, their testosterone production increases. And we also know that that being overweight can obviously increase the chances of erectile dysfunction for very specific reasons. So interestingly enough, urologists have been out there and kind of seeing this for a long time and have been trying to counsel their male patients both pharmacologically, but also, you know, trying to get them to lose weight as well.
Sarah Varney is a senior health policy correspondent with Kaiser Health News. Her new book is XL Love, How the Obesity Crisis is Complicating America's Love Life. Thanks so much for joining us. A lot in there to talk about.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Coming up, we'll look at the state of special education in New York City schools. I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Lehrer.